keeping you current on all things criminal. This is Crime Feed. Crime Feed. With Darren Kevinoki and Lonnie Coombs.
Welcome to Investigation Discovery's Crime Feed podcast. I'm Darren Kevinoki, and we are covering the ripped from the headlines cases that everybody's talking about.
And I'm Lonnie Coombs. And remember that this podcast is a weekly podcast, so be sure to come back and tune in every week to Darren
yes,
and I.
Yes, and do not be shy about telling your friends,
That's
too.
That's right.
So this week, we are talking about a controversial topic, one that has strong opinions on all sides of the issue, and that's death penalty cases. In fact, if you just quickly scan the current headlines from just this week, it brings out several examples. There's the James Holmes case. There's Shannon Miles, who killed a deputy in cold blood in Texas. I should say allegedly, because he's not been convicted
yet.
Even though it's caught on
just
camera.
Arrested.
There's a white supremacist who killed three people outside of Jewish centers in Overland Park, Kansas. And I guess the ironic bit is that he was out to kill Jews and none of his three victims were Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are even some cases that have garnered celebrity attention.
Right. And to help us talk about this subject today is a man with experience of peering into a killer's mind that very few people on the planet have. Retired homicide detective Joe Kenda. You've probably recognized his name. Kenda has spent 21 years in the Colorado Springs Police Department catching killers, had one of the highest case closure rates in the country, and now he's the host of Homicide Hunter, Lieutenant Joe Kenda, on the Investigation Discovery Channel, airing Tuesdays.
Can we just talk about how much we love Investigation Discovery?
Yes.
Shameless self-promotional plugs.
And
yes,
this,
go on.
And this show airs on Investigation Discovery Tuesdays at 10 Eastern. He also hosts Detective, a podcast with new episodes every Tuesday on iTunes and at thecrimefeed.com.
Let's face it, who has better war stories than prosecutors, defense lawyers, and cops? So with that buildup, welcome Lieutenant Joe.
Well, thank you very much. Very kind of you.
Well, and Joe, it's an honor to talk with you. As anyone in the criminal justice system knows, the homicide detectives are the cream of the crop as far as the top skills in investigation and putting a case together, and you were clearly one of the best. So we're going to jump right in and start with this first case, the James Holmes case, which we all know, the theater shooter in Colorado, your home state. A Colorado judge formally sentenced James Egan Holmes to multiple life terms plus thousands of years in prison for the Aurora Movie Theater massacre.
I think it was the fourth longest determinate sentence in judicial history.
Well, and it was interesting because, you know, they were going for the death penalty in the case, and the jury convicted him of the charges. But when it came to the death penalty, there was one lone holdout. And so the judge was bound to, he could not give him the death penalty. But when he sentenced him, it was very clear how the judge felt about it. He said, it's the court's intention that this defendant never set foot in free society again. If there was ever a case that warranted a maximum sentence, this is it. The defendant does not deserve any sympathy. And then he said, Sheriff, get the defendant out of my courtroom, please.
Yeah, the judge clearly let it all hang out. Joe, what do you think about what the judge did here, not just handing out the fourth longest prison sentence, but that personal commentary there, you know, get this guy the hell out of here. What's your take?
Well, it's obvious to me that that judge did what he had to do. This country has an enormous capacity to forgive and forget, and he's well aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you give somebody a life sentence, that's not a life sentence. Somebody's going to forgive that person. Somebody's going to say, oh, he's done enough time in jail. We need to let him out now because he's found religion. He's a much nicer person. He learned how to do basket weaving in prison. He's a wonderful guy. The judge is well aware that those things happen down the road, so he sentenced him in such a way that that could not happen in his case, that he is going to die in prison. The fact that somebody let him live, in my opinion, is a mistake. There are certain people who should be executed. I've always believed that. I've done this for a living for most of my adult life. Many people who commit the crime of murder are pathetic, stupid people who act out of emotion. But show me clear and convincing evidence that you engaged in scheme and design and malice aforethought and you coldly took lives. You need to be dead. And you need to be dead this afternoon.
Well, you know,
not tomorrow, not 20 more years of argument. Today would be just fine.
Yeah.
This is something that is true in his case. But somebody in that jury didn't believe that or was unwilling to stand up to the light of making a decision.
Well, and Joe, I think you're bringing up a good point, this lone juror. You know, as we know, those of us who watched the trial, there was a very strenuous defense put on about the defendant having these mental illnesses, that he had all of these delusions, that, you know, he was in this sort of fantasy land when all of this went on. And I think I thought that when there was a lone holdout, and I actually thought that the jury might have been more polarized than just one, that there might have been this compromise to it, that they said, look, we're going to convict him of all these charges, but because I still think there might be this mental illness there going on, we're going to give him a break and not find him guilty of the death penalty. I mean, we know that the Supreme Court came out and said you're not supposed to sentence anyone to death that is considered to be mentally, you know, retarded.
Right.
But there's a difference there. Do you think that entered into the jury's consideration, that one lone holdout?
Well, it probably did, but our difficulty is that we've gotten so lost in a discussion of the rules, we have forgotten the point of the game. This is about punishment. It's not about forgiveness. It's not about looking for an excuse. It's not about saying his mother never loved him. It's not about saying that he had an alcohol problem. It's not about saying he had a mental health problem. It's nothing about that. What did you do? You planned this for months.
Yeah, but there were...
You ordered weapons. You ordered ammunition. You organized. You made drawings of the theater. You made a plan. Is that something a crazy person does? Not in my opinion.
Well, there's clearly a difference between somebody who is legally insane, right? Somebody that doesn't appreciate the wrongfulness of their conduct versus somebody who is two scoops of crazy. And with this guy, with all of the mental health problems, that no doubt in your mind that you're just talking about somebody who was crazy, as we talk about it in common parlance, but no chance for you that this was somebody who would be close to insane.
They should have terminated him in the courtroom, in my humble opinion. That's probably why I'm not a judge.
I would make it look
like a schoolboy. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it probably wouldn't be a good idea, but please, we get so lost in the discussion that we just don't understand anymore, that there are not enough excuses on the planet to excuse that kind of behavior.
Well, you know, it's so interesting because you say they should have terminated him in the courtroom, and it's always struck me as a little bit odd that had a Good Samaritan been personally armed in that movie theater, could have terminated him right there on the spot. Right, and nobody
That's
would have
correct,
said boo.
But no one did.
Once he's in police custody, though, you know, now it's a whole different set of rules.
Now the game begins, and now we spend millions of dollars.
There you go.
And now we spend $100,000 a year to feed and watch him.
Well, actually,
with an anticipated lifespan of yet another 50 years times $100,000 times appeals times here we go.
Right. And it's interesting, you know, you're saying, you know, in your dream world, he would be executed immediately there in the courtroom. But as we know, that's in reality not what happens. Let me go through just a couple of numbers here. The defense costs for a death penalty trial in Kansas averages about $400,000 compared to a regular case, which is about $100,000. In California, the cost of death penalty in the state has cost over $4 billion since 1978. That's billion with a B. Death penalty costs North Carolina $2.16 million per execution over the cost of the sentencing murderers to life in prison. So we're talking about millions of dollars over the top. And in this case in particular, James Holmes, through his attorney, was willing to go ahead and plead guilty. He just wanted to argue for his life.
He just wanted a life term. He was willing, I think, to plead into a life without the possibility of parole.
Right.
And at the end of the day, the judge took some heat because this guy ended up getting what he was willing to just plea bargain into in the first place. And instead, we went through a lengthy, expensive, gut-wrenching trial.
Because I believe the prosecutors, and I believe the court also believed, that once this case was presented in its totality to include the scheme and design, the jury would find for death.
Yeah.
And 11 of them did.
Yeah.
One of them did.
Well, and at some point, there's things at stake that are more valuable than just money. But let me shift gears for a second, Joe. I'm sure you are well aware of that case out of Texas where a coward, I don't know another word for this guy. Well, I do know some other words. How about vicious and perhaps mentally ill? This guy, Shannon Miles, kills a Texas deputy, Darren Goforth, in cold blood, right? After this guy had pumped gas, and he's walking out of the convenience store, and Shannon Miles basically just walks up behind him, shoots him in the back of the head, and then empties his gun into him.
That is correct.
Is it my imagination, Joe, or have we been seeing more cop shootings than ever before?
No, it's not your imagination. It's a question of simple numbers.
What do you think it's all about?
More police officers killed each year as it moves forward. This is a country that is filled with very many people. Many people have issues with law enforcement. Many people have issues with authority, and we're talking about hundreds of millions of humans. We're not talking about a small number of people. There are more people in California than there are in Canada. Population of Canada is 30 million. Population of California is 35 million. This is an enormous country.
So is it just a matter of, as population grows exponentially, there's just going to be more violent people of every ilk?
Of course there are. It is a simple question of numbers. You put more people in a place, more of those people are going to be dangerous. It's simple enough.
Well, and Joe, it's also an interesting proposition when it comes to police officers being the victims. I did a death penalty case in 1996, the first female Secret Service agent killed in the line of duty, and we sought the death penalty and the jury came back for death. In the early 2000s, I did another police officer killing, asked the jury for the death penalty, and they came back for life. And at that time, we were noticing here in Los Angeles a trend about the death penalty, that they were being imposed less and less. And we were saying, it's a police officer. I mean, that used to be a given you would get the death penalty. And now we were thinking, do you have to have multiple police officers killed to get the death penalty?
No, I think that probably the general public, from which we select members of a jury, have lost faith in the system. They don't believe anybody's going to get executed anyway. So why go through the drill? Why put my name on this? Why put my name to a death sentence when it'll never be carried out? I'll just give them life in prison and we'll move on.
Well, that is a good point. I mean, the guy that I convicted in 1996 and got the death penalty in 1996 is still on death row.
Yeah, of course he is.
Yeah.
And you're,
his mistake was, or his benefit was, he did that in California.
Mm-hmm.
Had he done that in Texas, he'd already be dead.
Yeah.
But
Florida.
Well, yeah, in Florida. I mean, there's some states where they occasionally have a fast track. But I wonder at times, Joe, what it is that we're fighting for. Because one of the primary rationales that's often discussed for the death penalty is the deterrent effect, right? That everybody's going to see
it. It's not a deterrent.
Right, that's true.
It can't be a deterrent. It just cannot be. No matter what anybody says, it's not a deterrent.
Yeah, yeah.
People don't even think about it. They don't think about it. They assume they're never going to get arrested anyway.
Right, which is exactly my point. I wonder in a case, like when I think about Shannon Miles and that horrific case, which, by the way, happened in Texas where they do where they do fast-track death penalty offenders.
Of course it did.
What would have deterred that guy?
Not only did this individual choose to do this crime, obviously a conscious choice, now, irrespective of his mental state. It's his gun. It's his finger that pulls the trigger 15 times. He is the man who did this. He does it in front of a surveillance camera in a state where they execute people every Thursday. Was any of that a deterrent to him? No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
But do you
was the surveillance camera a deterrent? No. Was the history of the state of Texas in carrying out the death sentence a deterrent to him? No.
But do you think, Joe, that there's any kind of a fundamental disconnect? So Wayne Dyer, who people may know as an author and sadly passed away this last week, he often said that that life is full of these misalignments, and that going to war to fight for peace made as much sense as fornicating for virginity.
And
I just can't help but wonder if on some level the death penalty is a similar thing, especially for those that espouse the deterrent effect.
Clearly
you see it the way I think a lot of criminologists and social scientists see it, which is the notion of a deterrent effect is totally BS. But it always has been.
That's always been their excuse, that it's a deterrent, okay? The other excuse is, well, it's nothing more than revenge. Okay, it's just revenge. It's eye for an eye. It's biblical. It's something that our barbarous ancestors engaged in, and we're not barbarous. We are civilized, and we don't engage in biblical behaviors of an eye for an eye, and so on. And then there's the middle argument that says, well, no, it's not a deterrent, and it's certainly not revenge. It is punishment for behavior.
Is that where you come down? Is that where you come down, Joe?
I come down only in certain cases. In most cases, the death penalty is not appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Even in murder cases, it's not appropriate. You need to find someone. You need to have someone who is without benefit of social merit, someone who exhibits behavior exhibiting extreme indifference to the value of human life. What is the purpose in keeping this person alive? To avoid the unpleasantness of killing him? Or to pay for his incarceration for 20 or 30 or 40 years? Why are we doing that?
Yeah.
The rest of the world doesn't do that. There are many places in the world that execute to this day for lesser crimes than murder.
Yeah.
Well, Indonesia, DUI will get you a death sentence, which is bizarre, but it's true.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
life is cheap all over this planet.
Yeah. I think it's a good point that you bring out that, and it's interesting because I think people assume that a homicide detective and I as a prosecutor would want the death penalty, you know, sort of all the time. And yet it's very, very circumspect. And you're talking about, you know, saving it for those special people. And here's one of them.
That's exactly right. And those people are, thank heaven for all of us, that they're rare.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's another one, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah.
Frazier Glenn Miller, he's admitted to killing three people at two suburban Kansas City Jewish sites. He was convicted of murder and other charges. He told the jurors, because he was representing himself, that he hoped to die a martyr for the shootings. Now the jury's trying to deliberate to see if he's going to get the death penalty or not. But this is one of these people that you're talking about. And he, you know, when they were talking about how many people he wanted to kill, he jumped up and he said, no, I wanted to kill Jews, not people. I mean, he just really has such a hatred for people that
he does.
Yeah, talk about a lack of regard for human life.
Yeah.
But of course. And those people, as I said, those people are extremely rare. Thank heaven, okay, that they are. But most people who commit this crime, and I dealt with hundreds of them who did, are for the most part morons.
Well, and this guy
responded to the emotion of the moment, who got angry, the highly provoking act on the part of the victim, resulting in an irresistible rise of passion in the perpetrator, and shots are fired, stabbing occurs, manual strangulation is applied, and the victim dies.
Yeah. Hey,
it's a crime that warrants execution, in my opinion. No, it isn't.
But when we're talking about moronic, Joe, and I'm sure you can appreciate in this case, I think the ultimate moronic move is this was a criminal defendant who chose to represent himself at the trial. But you know, obviously the Constitution guarantees people that right, but yet in the case of self-representation, and especially in a capital case, it's going to guarantee some appeals. But here's a guy who's 74 years old. He's dying of emphysema. Obviously a horrific case. In your view, is this worth a death penalty trial and all the associated costs?
No, it's not.
What's the distinction for you? Is it a cost-benefit thing?
There's several things going on here with that guy. First of the thing, by his own admission, he wants to be a martyr.
Mm-hmm.
He hopes they kill him. He would prefer to be executed on the steps of the courthouse in front of the press. That's what he would prefer. That's, in fact, he's demanding it. You should kill me because I'm a martyr to the cause. What cause is that? Well, he has difficulty articulating his cause because he is so filled with hatred and so beyond reason that how crazy is he? Well, he's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Now, is he dangerous? Yes, he is dangerous. Is he going to die within probably 18 months? Yes, he is. Why are we going to invest several million dollars in appeal processes and all the money it's going to take to allow him to fight his death penalty when he has been given one by Mother Nature?
Yeah.
Well, the irony is, I think the person who might disagree with it, even though I understand and appreciate the cost-benefit analysis, it's the judge in the James Holmes case when he was when his feet were put to the flames about, you know, why it was that all the time and money went into that case, and was asking publicly, since when do we as a nation, as a community, put money ahead of everything else? When did that happen? And
yeah, well, and, my answer is when we ran out of money.
Yeah, when we ran out of money.
And I think Joe is right. I think that if we're, you know, a lot of states have gotten rid of the death penalty because it costs so much money and all of these other arguments we've been making. But I think Joe has the more rational approach, and that is you keep the death penalty in place, but only for those very select few cases.
Well, Joe,
that is correct. And I think, as I said, I've said this a couple of times now, those individuals, thank God for most of us, are very rare people.
Right.
And you keep that process and you keep it available. It's another tool in the toolbox, but it should be used judiciously, and it shouldn't be used to compensate for political uproar or racial hatred or religious hatred or crimes that tend to give rise to emotion in people. That's not what this is about.
Mm-hmm.
Lady Justice wears a blindfold for a reason.
Mm-hmm. That's right. She
Let's
doesn't want to
listen to the facts. What are the facts?
Oh, I see.
We have clear and convincing evidence that this person engaged scheme and design, malice aforethought, and coldly took another life because he wanted to. Do we have that? Well, yes, we have that. Are there any extenuating circumstances? Well, not really. Are there any exigencies? Is he very young? Is he adolescent? Is he this? Is he that? No. No, he's an educated adult. Well, then we are talking probably about a death case. If we don't have those things in place, we're not talking about a death case. We're talking about a murder case resulting in incarceration.
Joe, I think those are awesome points. I'm a fan of yours for a variety of reasons, but certainly your level of insight and your level of professionalism and your judicious use of resources and all that. I mean, I'm an enormous fan, and I'm grateful for you spending time. For those of you who aren't familiar with Lieutenant Joe Kenda, you've obviously been not watching your investigation discovery like you should, but please check out Homicide Hunter Lieutenant Joe Kenda if you've not already, and check out his podcast too. Detective is the name of it, and you can check it out on iTunes and crimefeed.com. Joe, thanks again. We hope
thanks,
we see you
Joe.
Soon.
Appreciate your time.
You're entirely welcome.
All right, buddy. Be well. You know, it's so interesting, Lonnie. You know, my fundamental beef with the death penalty is not that some people don't deserve a good killing. It's around the number of exonerations. There's a clearinghouse that's kept by the University of Michigan Law School that has a national registry of exonerations. And I just checked it today when we were getting ready. And it shows that there are 1,655 exonerations, which have resulted in freedom from more than 10,000 wrongfully served prison years. And many of those are from death row. And until we have confidence in the system, I just can't help but wonder if we have business killing people. That's just my...
Well, and you're not the only one that's concerned. I mean, out of our states right now, only 31 states have the death penalty. 19 have done away with the death penalty. And right now, California is counted as one with the death penalty, but it's in flux. A lot of people are having those same concerns. I think that the Innocence Project and the DNA testing and stuff that is showing so many more exonerations, it's accelerated in the last however many years. I think that's made a lot of people wonder about the efficacy of it.
It's certainly an issue for us to keep our eye on.
And speaking of keeping our eye on, let's move into our cases. I've got one case that I'm keeping my eye on. It's an interesting case, simply because the defense has nothing to do with the law. So this is a case where a father named Brian Randolph, he's 23 years old, is accused of robbing a bank, the Vibe Credit Union Bank in South Lyon, Michigan. And he said that he did it to pay for his daughter's cancer treatment. Now, the mother of his daughter, who is only 1 year old, the daughter, said that the insurance had lapsed because she didn't know she was supposed to renew it on her daughter's birthday. And the appointment for her chemo treatment for her eye cancer was coming up, and they didn't have any insurance coverage. So apparently the father panicked about being able to pay for it. And so he went out and tried to get the money from the bank. However, as the police pointed out, he said, since the crime occurred, the alleged crime, the father slash defendant also went out and bought a Gucci bag, LeBron James sneakers, and paid 2 months' rent.
Wait, is this a case we're keeping an eye on, or is this world's dumbest criminal?
Well, you can choose. So essentially, the defense has thrown down the gauntlet to the judge and said, look, we're throwing ourselves on the mercy of the court and saying, we're not saying that what he did was right, but he was very misguided. And they're hoping that the judge will show them some mercy. What's also interesting is based on this story, the media picked it up and supporters have raised over $8,000 through a GoFundMe page for the daughter. So it's going to be interesting to see how this argument plays out in court.
Wow. Yeah, I'll definitely be keeping my eye on that, as well as another case that I'm keeping my eye on, the one about the texts from a girlfriend led to her boyfriend's suicide.
Oh, this is horrible.
Michelle Carter and Conrad Roy III were engaged in what sounds like, or it's been described as, a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, but it seems a little odd. During the course of this, and now I'm using my air quotes, relationship.
It was a two-year relationship.
It was a lengthy relationship, but they only saw each other a few times.
Right.
Most of their interactions, it seemed like, were over the phone and via text message. And they had swapped text messages for months concerning his suicide. And his girlfriend, far from trying to talk him out of it, was actually encouraging him to do himself in. Now, this girl, Michelle Carter, clearly winning the award for worst person in the world, or at least the least likely person to get a new boyfriend, is on trial for manslaughter because ultimately Conrad Roy killed himself. As she's giving him these text messages, encouraging him to kill himself, and this was done in his car, carbon monoxide poisoning. And at one point, he actually gets out of the car, and she sends him a text to get back in the car.
Yeah. However, this is a free speech, right? I mean, that's what the defense is arguing. This is just language on her part that he still had his free will. He made his own determination there. And also, the defense has pointed out that in this state, there isn't a law against encouraging or supporting a suicide. Of course, I think that law was more for like a Kevorkian type case, opposed to this, but they're going to try and use that.
And use it here. But it's so interesting because it really, to me, the reason I'm keeping my eye on this case is it illustrates the tension between somebody's conduct and somebody else's free will. Because for whatever it was that this idiotic young girl did to encourage him to commit suicide, to cajole him, to send these text messages, to tell him to get back in the car, at some point, doesn't he have the responsibility to, break up with her? It's a horrible, tragic case, and my heart goes out to this young man who took his own life. And she is, I think, one of the worst people in the world, but I don't know that she deserves to be convicted of manslaughter for this. So it's certainly one that I'm keeping my eye on.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, her conduct after his death is not going to make any friends on the jury because his death, she became a self-proclaimed advocate for mental health, and she organized a fundraising tournament in his honor and his memory. I mean, the jury's not going to like that.
Felony stupid. Well, speaking of felony stupid, let's talk about our dumbest criminals. We call it a little bit of a competition, but really it's not. It's Lonnie wins every week. But it's a little competition between Lonnie and me to see who can find the dumbest criminal activity. And as always, please send me your ideas, people, or just tweet to us in general. But hopefully we'll have some unanimous agreement about who wins. Lonnie, ladies first, or I guess to the victor goes first.
Winners go first.
Yeah.
mine is very simple this week. It comes out of Oregon.
Come from
Oregon.
I'm from Oregon.
If you want to step up and say that right now, go ahead.
All right.
So this one comes out of Oregon, and this is under the title of Make Sure You Think About the Weapon You Pick to Take to Your Battle. So this defendant, Derek Mosley, decided he was going to go burglarize a store. So his weapon of choice was a baseball bat. He went into the store. He started bashing up the display cabinets there. However, the store he had picked to burglarize was a gun store. So the owner who was there watching this guy with his baseball bat just reached down into the now open display case, pulled out one of the guns, and took him down.
Oh, my God. It's like that Indiana Jones movie with the guy flipping the swords and Andy just pulls out the pistol and
boom,
shoots him. Yeah, there is something. Well, damn. And I thought I had such a good one this week. Well, we'll see.
Go ahead. Let's hear it.
You've got to play the game on the field. So here's a word of advice to jail inmates who are going to give press interviews. Off the record actually doesn't mean anything to the FBI agents who are listening in. So there's a guy, Matthew Mueller, who's now learning that lesson the hard way.
Hey.
He's accused of kidnapping. He's been in custody for a while now up in Alameda, California, and he's facing charges for home invasion, for kidnapping, and his lawyer is trying to have evidence suppressed, things like a pair of swim goggles that were converted to a blindfold, some aerial drones, a super soaker that was mocked up to look like a laser-sighted handgun, and he's doing all this work to try and vindicate his client. But the one piece of evidence that may be the ace in the hole for the prosecution is this little interview that Mueller gave to a local TV reporter where Mueller confessed to the kidnapping, but he did it off the record and on background.
Oh, there you go.
So
there you go.
Yeah. So I guess there is no privilege when it comes to talking to a reporter.
Wow.
Is your little nugget.
Yeah.
You've got attorney-client privilege.
Our legal tip for the week.
You've got a privilege talking to your priest, but when you're talking to a reporter,
don't trust him.
Not so much. And you also have no expectation of privacy, generally speaking, when you're calling somebody from jail.
That's right.
And so don't be surprised if the FBI is listening.
Somebody's listening always.
Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
Hey, guys, it was a great episode this week. I sure enjoyed it. Darren?
This was awesome. I loved having Joe here. I could talk to that guy for hours.
Yeah, and the death penalty is such an interesting issue, and people have such strong opinions. Share yours with us.
Share them. Yeah. Tweet at us at @IDCrimeFeed and use the hashtag CrimeFeedPodcast. And if you want to tweet to me, you can use the hashtag #DumbAsCriminals.
There you go. Well, I'm Lonnie Coombs. Thanks so much for listening. And remember, if you want more shocking true crime stories, watch Investigation Discovery or visit crimefeed.com.
Keeping you current on all things criminal, Crime Feed.
Crime Feed.
With Darren Kevinoki and Lonnie Coombs.